Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, victory.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up.
Sport has the power to change the world. It has the power to inspire.
Welcome to the Lead Different podcast. Today is going to be exciting, encouraging. As all of us have been affected in this country and in the world by the pandemic, the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic, vaccines have made a big difference. And it can be sometimes an area of confusion or concern about getting a vaccine. So today we're going to be talking about a couple of things, but they're all built around the idea of the sensory-friendly vaccine clinic. The Hope Technology School is partnering with the Bay Area Christian Church and Sequoia Hospital to provide COVID-19 vaccines for people 12 and up who may require a more sensory-friendly environment. This clinic was developed by a team of medical professionals, special education, teachers, and parents. It will provide a calm, safe, and inclusive atmosphere in which anyone who would like to get vaccinated can do so free from the barriers that might be present at a typical vaccination site. So let's just talk for a couple minutes before we get into the guest we're going to have today, two doctors that are really brilliant doctors. I'll tell you more about them in a minute. The sensory-friendly atmosphere will include short wait times, minimal transitions, no crowds, visual aids, social stories, quiet areas, and much more. The sensory-friendly clinic will be held on May 15th and June 12th at the Sequoia Health and Wellness Clinic in Redwood City, California, and you can sign up at bacc.cc/clinic, bacc.cc/clinic. As always, you know, we're going to put those in the show notes so you'll be able to get them, and we'll make sure that when our different newsletter goes out, that you'll also be able to get some information about the sensory-friendly vaccine clinic at that time. Now, my guests today are a special friend who I've known for, since I was age 19. We went to school. Both of us were at school together at Boston University, and his name is Dr. David Traver. Dr. Traver earned his undergraduate degree, graduating with high honors in biology at Boston University. He was accepted early in his undergraduate years into the modular medical curriculum as a Commonwealth Fund scholar, and in so doing, gained interest into Boston University School of Medicine upon graduation. After receiving his Doctor of Medicine, he completed his internship and residency in pediatrics at Boston City Hospital, now known as Boston Medical Center. Dr. Traver has demonstrated a heart for those who are less fortunate, serving as a physician for various international relief efforts throughout Asia, including the Philippines, Vietnam, and Cambodia. It was in Phnom Penh where he and his wife helped start the internationally acclaimed National Teaching Hospital, the Sihanouk Hospital Center of Hope. After returning to the States, Dr. Traver worked at a large managed care medical group where he served as a volunteer clinical faculty for Stanford University School of Medicine. It was during this time that he became aware of friends' children who had been diagnosed with autism, and he soon became deeply interested in this set of conditions. Subsequently, Dr. Traver spent 2 years at Stanford University Medical Center's Division of Child and Adolescent Psychology. There, in the Pervasive Developmental Disorder Neuropsychiatry and ADHD clinics, he became familiar with the treatment and management of individuals with autistic spectrum disorders and ADHD, utilizing psychopharmacology as well as performing individualized assessments as part of the clinic team. Bottom line, what are we saying? Dr. Traver's practice, which involves autism research and treatment for the past 20 years, is one of the best, and he has helped me personally as I have a child with autism, and I can vouch for both his credibility and impact on my life and the impact on the hundreds of patients he's treated in the Bay Area and beyond. Also joining us on the podcast is Dr. Dieter Bruno. Dr. Bruno is currently the chief medical officer at Sequoia Hospital. And we have to give Dr. Bruno a ton of credit because he was one of the key is in engineering, pulling off this partnership. A lot of us got together and talked, and we ended up being able to build it together along with the executive staff, the president, CEO of Sequoia Hospital, Bill Graham, as well as the rest of the executive team. But Dr. Bruno's taking time to come on our podcast and to be able to help us understand how the clinic can work along with Dr. Traver. And again, he was mentor and professor at Duke University to a number of students in the Department of Urology. Dr. Bruno received his medical school and in urologic training at Duke University Medical Center. He's held faculty positions at Duke University Medical Center, as well as East Carolina University School of Medicine. While on the faculty at Duke University, believe it or not, and yes, you can believe it, he won an award for best teacher. His clinical focus has been on male and female incontinence, advanced endoscopic stone manipulation, and advanced laparoscopic slash robotic techniques. He is responsible for beginning the prostate cancer brachytherapy. Now, I don't even know how to say that name, so you're just going to have to forgive me, but what is it saying? He flat out is a beast when it comes to medical procedures. At the program at the East Carolina School of Medicine in 2003 and the urologic robotic program at East Carolina University School of Medicine in 2002, he's credited with performing the first Da Vinci urologic robotic surgical procedure, as well as the second Da Vinci robotic prostatectomy in the state of North Carolina. Now, I had to mention those things, even though you know I'm struggling with some of these medical terms, because we're getting one of the best surgeons that you can find. Currently, Dr. Bruno is, as I mentioned, chief medical officer at Sequoia Hospital. Prior to that, he was the advanced robotic surgical techniques head of surgery at Sequoia Hospital. He has performed hundreds of robotic prostatectomies and has proctored numerous urologists and robotic techniques in North Carolina as well as California, and currently teaches courses for Intuitive Surgical. Dr. Bruno is an incredible guest. Dr. Traver is an incredible guest. I can't say enough about them. Dr. Bruno is familiar with vaccine speaking and talking and helping us calm our nerves and understand what's going on. And a lot of us out there feel that way. And so I hope that you'll enjoy listening to this podcast with Dr. Bruno and Dr. Traver. Welcome to the Lead Different podcast. We have a special podcast for you today because we're going to talk about leadership, but we're going to talk about leadership in a different way. You know, one of the interesting things I've noticed is that on, and I've got Dr. Traver and I got Dr. Bruno here. I'll call Dr. Bruno by his first name today, Dieter, because we know each other a little bit. And I'll call Dr. Traver Dave because we've known each other a long time. And one of the things that I noticed is Dr. Fauci's been going around doing a lot of interviews, and he said, we've gotten to a lot of the people who want to be vaccinated, but now we've got to get to people who are, you know, they've got questions, they're frightened, or they just haven't been reached yet. And he used a term called, we need trusted messengers. And he kept using that, trusted messengers. And he listed off personal physicians. He listed off clergy, people who are in the community that know people that can help them overcome their fears about getting vaccinated. And in talking about the sensory-friendly vaccine clinic, I already mentioned in our intro, Dr. Bruno Dieter, that really we all kind of came together, Dr. Traver, Dave, and I have to give a lot of thanks to you, Dieter, for really kind of partnering us and bringing us all together to be able to produce this sensory-friendly clinic. And it comes to my mind, and maybe both of you can talk about this for a minute, and first you, Dieter, that what you saw was to get to the underserved parts of the community, you do need trusted messengers. And by partnering with Hope Technology School and the Bay Area Christian Church, you found some people that can kind of be messengers for you to be able to reach those parts of the community. But maybe you can talk a little bit about just why that's so important and why that's so helpful. And Dave, you can chime in.
Okay. Thanks, Russ. And Dave, be happy to do that. You know, COVID has definitely been a time period where we learned a lot about challenging the way we think about things, from how we take care of individuals to what skill sets we bring to a collective measure, such as evaluating COVID and even now more importantly, treating COVID. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let me give you an example. One of the things that we noticed early on is that there was a plan about how counties were going to vaccinate everyone. And one of the things that we learned is that was a great idea. However, the counties have certain skill sets in incident command. Hospitals have certain skill sets in how to take care of patients and provide resources. And one of the things that we learned is there was a plan, and the plan just didn't really work well until we all partnered together. As hospital networks, we have the ability to think about things from a quality perspective, each individual patient. But for example, we didn't know how to do incident command. So even when we looked at vaccinating 2,000-3,000 people in a day through a drive up through the county, it was really a great opportunity to partner. Mm. When we talk about our vulnerable populations, there is no question. A lot of the barriers that we have are things that there's either a decrease in trust, or there are technology issues, transportation issues, concerns about deportation or being stigmatized. So one of the things that we learned in this whole process is that through our health and wellness system, it does a very good job of partnering with community organizations that really have the pulse in the community and really connect well with individuals, whether or not it's underrepresented individuals. In the case that we're talking about, special needs individuals, you know, through HTS and the BACC, it really taught us that we absolutely have to partner with trusted community individuals that really work with the groups of interest so that we can really make headway.
I think what's exciting about what you're saying, and I want the listeners to hear, again, the partnership is going to be producing the sensory vaccine clinic that I talked about earlier in our intro, is that hospitals and doctors are really doing everything they can to make people and patients feel comfortable getting the vaccine. And sometimes there's a lot of talk in the news or in the community about the dangers of the vaccines, the fear of the vaccines. But these are people in the medical community that are working hard to make it not just communicate the safety of the vaccine, but to make us feel safe and secure in getting the vaccine and reaching us. And sometimes I think that the medical community can be depicted by certain people as not having that kind of touchy-feely sort of personal sense, but this is evidence of it. And I say that because a lot of people may be listening and thinking, hey, do I really want to go to a vaccine clinic? Do I really want to get a vaccine? And when you can hear, and I think you did a great job, a human voice putting a human face and a human heart on it, it's not just like we just want to put a needle in your arm. We want to protect you, and we want to make sure that you're able to participate in the full experience of life. So I appreciate those thoughts. Dave, do you have some thoughts on trusted messengers and on the idea, especially for special needs parents, because you work with and help them a lot. You've helped me and my family. Do you want to say some words for those who may be a little fearful going, I just don't know. I don't know how to process this emotionally. I don't know how to think about it. I'm worried about, is it going to be safe for my kid? Will my kid do well? Like, just a couple of tips from the very top. What would you tell a parent, and you've coached up so many of them, that would help them be able to sort of relax and say, you know what, let me just, you know, get my mind around it and how it's going to work instead of how it's not going to work?
Well, again, thank you, Russ and Dieter. It's great being together. I absolutely think this is a critical topic, because I can only speak from my own experience as a doctor, seeing so many of these families with special needs children and adults, actually. Mm-hmm. The first thing that these individuals have to understand, and these families have to understand, is their concerns are not unique. They're not unique just to special needs families. So oftentimes these individuals feel a bit self-disparaged. What I mean is that they feel like they are ashamed of their concerns. They feel skittish about even verbalizing their worries. And that is the wrong thing to feel. It's this idea of, if I term it, self-shaming is ridiculous. And I think these questions are very legitimate. They are to be respected and they're to be addressed. So I think that the first thing is that there's, I think, an unnecessary divide that's imposed by a lot of these families that shouldn't be there. They need to know they are understood, and they want to be understood by a lot of the medical community. So that's the first thing I would mention.
That's a great.
Yeah. The second is, I think that it's very critical for a lot of people to know that people giving these, offering these services, really do care. I think you used the word human several times. That is not always a word that we verbalize in our busy daily practices, but that is something that is inherently vital to the success of this whole endeavor. The issue with vaccinations, and I may be stepping a little bit out of the box of conversation, is not just the science behind these pretty amazing, you know, formulations in such a short amount of time, right? It's a lot of it is just the surrounding issues and considerations that can unfortunately offer impediments and hurdles to people. And it's not so much just what kind of liquid am I having put into me. It's much more, does anyone really understand my questions? And can I talk to anybody about this? And I can go forward to say that every week, virtually every week, if not every day that I see patients, I am having encounters and appointments with people who are asking many questions. And each of their situations, of course, is unique because it's their family member or themselves, but they are not so unique to think that these people are, you know, just out of it, or they're, you know, unnecessarily concerned. So I hope that makes some sense.
Absolutely, it does. And I'm going to, you guys are doing such a great job, and I hope everybody appreciates you. I like what you said, and just from being able to be a part of the discussions and planning, and I want everybody out there to know that Sequoia Hospital and Hope Technology School have put a tremendous number of resources into this, a lot of effort and a lot of time. And I have not seen a lot of communities in the country do this. Like, I've been watching, and there are people that are having vaccines. They have a sensory room, but I've not seen a hospital say, we're going to create a sensory clinic. And I want to make sure that people understand Sequoia Hospital didn't have to do this. This wasn't something that was mandated by the county or the state or the country. This is them saying, hey, we know how difficult this is. We know how painful this can be. And I love your phrase, Dave, don't be ashamed of your vaccine questions. I think that's just perfect, because that's what I feel you guys are talking about. I want to just read a couple of clips from an article in Bloomberg. It says this: the U.S. has the shots it needs, but vaccine doubt is prolonging the pandemic. And I just want to try to get this across to you. Hopefully just a couple of clips. In November, as promising trial data suggested it was more and more likely a vaccine might be ready before the end of the year, a man named D'Amato wrote a sarcastic Facebook post remarking on the people's overblown fears about vaccine side effects. So this guy D'Amato got on Facebook and said, why is everybody afraid? We're going to get these vaccines. We ought to take them. He and his wife, a teacher, could see their borough getting hammered by the virus where they lived. He was working more overnight shifts than ever, and they were both extremely exhausting from juggling the kids because they were in and out of school. So D'Amato couldn't wait to get his shot. Then his aunt texted him a response to his Facebook post. So he posted, I'm fired up to get this shot. And his aunt texted him on Facebook. The aunt, a nurse, said she wanted him to consider another point of view. She sent him literature, but D'Amato says the accompanying video was what really got him. In the video, a man who identifies himself as a coronavirus researcher makes a bunch of claims about problems with the coming vaccines. He says falsely that the mRNA vaccines had been rushed to market without proper trials, and that drug makers had covered up safety concerns about how the vaccines might kill people or sterilize them. The video was full of such misinformation and outright lies, and a quick Googling showed D'Amato Googled it, that the researcher had been associated with conspiracy theories before, but that didn't matter. The seeds of doubt had been planted. This is a quote. He said, I felt even if half of his concerns were correct, it was enough to worry about, D'Amato says. There are too many questions. Earlier this year, when his station was offered the vaccine, he opted out. So he was excited. He got from a nurse, the medical person, hey, you better look at this. Then he went, I don't want it. Now, this is what I want you to comment on in regard to that. I'm sure you'll comment on a lot. People like D'Amato aren't anti-vaxxers. He's a paramedic, gets his flu shot every year. They're vaccine skeptics, people who don't quite know what to think, so they figure, why not wait and see how the shot works out for others, or they bet on the protection they'll get from everyone around them being vaccinated. One of the problems with the framing of the pro and the anti is that it kind of pushes out this middle group that are undecided but are still open. Now, I know that Dr. Dieter has helped me with medical concerns. And one of the things he told me is, he goes, Russ, don't get on the internet and read about it, because it'll get you totally afraid. You won't want to do anything. And he was right, because I got on the internet. I was like, don't touch me. Get away from me. And so I don't want to make light of anybody's concerns, but I'm saying everybody does it. But we have two well-qualified and legendary in their own area doctors who can help us be calm and know how to think about it when doubt starts to fester. And I want everybody to understand, no one in the medical community, in my opinion, wants to classify people as anti-vaxxers or pro-vaxxers. I think they understand there's just a lot of information, education, and messaging that needs to be done. I don't know. Let's, we started with Dieter. So Dave, do you want to comment on this guy? Then we'll come to Dieter and he can make a comment.
Well, we live in the age of information, but that doesn't mean it's accurate information. And, you know, as they say, the devil's always in the details. So I don't think that, let me be first to say this. I don't think that I or anybody have the crystal ball, transcendent, know all, see all, fund of knowledge to be able to answer every single question or concern that people have. We live in a tragic global crisis right now. And as with all of us, we have to be able to travel our own journey of information gathering, decision making, reflection. Some will be longer than others, but that's a legitimate and respectable process. After hearing what you shared, it's alarming because all of it's not about whether, first of all, this is not a binary issue, as you pointed out, right? But it's alarming because all of us are very frightened right now in a number of different areas. And so we don't have this linear algorithm to follow when we we approach this crossroads of what to do. And for every person, that crossroads may look a little different. So I think that people are very, very frightened. And I don't want to keep, you know, talking here, but I think they're frightened for different reasons or they're concerned for different reasons. And those are two very different categories. Just because you're concerned doesn't mean you're frightened.
And so the first thing you want them to understand is, hey, we respect and you can everybody shouldn't be ashamed. They should go, look, I'm skeptical. I don't know how to think about this and that's okay. And I want every listener to understand and pass this podcast along to others that are concerned that what Dr. Traver, what Dave is saying is, look, it would be disingenuous of anyone to say that your skepticisms and fears are not of concern. But the question is, you know, what's the answer and response? And I want to make a note that the D'Amato guy, once he talked to people, he said, I'm going to get my vaccine because he had to have the doubt erased. And I want to get Dieter in on that.
Yeah, thanks. You know, I think we have to take a step back and look at the human element of what everyone's been through for the past better part of a year. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, as a society, we definitely value our personal freedom or what we perceive to be our personal freedom and our personal choice. And it's a paradigm shift because when we're thinking about a global pandemic, what we're really thinking about is retooling how we think and actually trying to focus on what's better for other people at the same time that we are trying to process our own fears. There's no benefit to shaming, you know, people in a situation like this because fear makes us do really wonky things. And a wonky thing is when we start looking at data, we get confused about what we're really looking at. And people have tried to use data throughout this past year to justify positions that, you know, many times were evolving positions. I mean, when we think about even what we've learned about how COVID-19 was transmitted, it evolved over time. You know, we went from it's droplet to contact. Airborne, what does airborne really mean? You know, we really were challenging what we think. And because of that, there were missteps that were made because we're learning. When you learn how to ride a bike, you fall down. When you learn to walk, you fall down. And we were learning about something very quickly. So I think we have to have compassion on people. I think that we have to be willing to really dig into what people's concerns are, but also try to be more realistic about what we're looking at. What we're looking at is a pathway forward. We're not looking for 100% data. We're not looking to do a clinical trial. We're saying, how do we, with a reasonable effort, understand that over 500,000 people in this country alone passed away secondary to COVID, regardless of what we want to believe, it's hard to deny.
Right.
Doesn't mean that everybody's going to die from COVID. No. When we think about vaccinations, you know, we have to understand that a lot of people didn't actually take care of people who were dying day in and day out in the hospital. So they don't have that framework.
Yeah.
We have to work for vaccine ambassadors. One of the things that we've found for our community work, and this is actually really interesting, as we started getting the younger individuals involved, the 18-year-olds, the 17-year-olds, the 16-year-olds in a lot of our more vulnerable communities, they're actually a lot of the times the ones that actually wanted to get vaccinated.
Wow, really?
And did a lot of communicating to their parents and their uncles and their aunts. And that's one of the things we found when we looked at the county in San Mateo County, and we looked at how we were going to start to reach some of the more difficult populations. We realized that partnering with some of the younger organizations and the teenagers who really wanted to get back to school, get back to doing things, get back to hanging out with their friends. They weren't as afraid, because as we get older, we get afraid of everything.
Stop talking about me, Dieter. I don't want to hear it anymore.
So it's kind of, you have to know your audience. You know, what works in one group, you know, we worked in some groups in North Fair Oaks and San Mateo County, and we realized that vaccine ambassadors really work. When we deal with people who are more focused on data, sometimes it's understanding what they're looking at and how to have a conversation that doesn't really put judgment on them, but really acknowledges the fears, the insecurities, paints a picture as to where we're trying to get, and understanding you may need to have multiple conversations, and we're all trying to get there. Yeah. We probably won't reach herd immunity the way we originally thought we would, but we can never give up, because ultimately the essence of what we're doing is understanding that we have to move everyone along as quickly as we can and to a better place, because everybody's been impacted in a different way from this. And, you know, we just have to kind of deal with the difficult situations and have the courage to do that.
That's tremendous. That's tremendous. Thank you so much for just both of you for explaining it. I'll briefly say my own personal experience. I remember when I had to have a test done that I did not want. So I was with my personal physician, and he said, "Hey, based on these numbers, I think you ought to get this test." And it's not an easy test to take. And I was like, not really. And it wasn't like a absolute, you know, it wasn't like you have this. It was like, we want to make sure there's nothing going on. And I was like, I ain't going through all that. I'm not. And I say that because I think that what Dr. Traver and Dr. Bruner are saying, everyone goes through this in their personal life. I used to fear doctors because I was afraid of what they might say, not realizing that what they might say could save me or prevent me from anxiety, difficulty, and whatever. And I remember I left him, and I got on the phone, and at that point, I don't think I knew for sure what medicine. I didn't know your specialty, Dieter, was connected to what I was dealing with. So I called Dave. I remember I said, basically, tell me how I don't have to take this procedure. I was looking for confirmation bias. So I was like, I don't want to do it. And my doctor, my personal physician, is awesome. But, and he was like, he was younger than me though. He goes, "I just think you ought to do it, because what can it hurt?" You know, and I'm like, "I think it can hurt a lot of ways." And you know, he laughed at me, and we talked, and he said, "Well, take a little time." And I said, "Look, I want to trust you on this." But when I talked to Dave, Dave goes, "Look," I gave him information. He goes, "I don't think there's a way around this. You should talk to Dieter." And then you told me, you said, "Hey, you know, you taught me through the issue." And what I'm trying to get to everybody's listening is, find someone you trust. And one thing I know is you can't trust the internet. That I know. I'm not going to trust a stranger on YouTube. Find a person you trust, but that will not confirm your feeling, that will look at what you're talking about and tell you. And so I think it's so great what you say. I want to add another thing here that I think might segue us into sort of rounding it out for everybody. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is very interesting. Scientific America had an article about it, and I won't read it, but they take the position of saying, we know a lot of people are concerned because it went on a pause, but they take the position of, you have to look at the fact that this event that happened with blood clots is much more rare than COVID-19 is, and that was the position they took. But I've heard parents of special needs kids who are signing up and have signed up and registered that want the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And I was like, oh, wow, that you know, they want it, but there's probably people out there that are like, why would someone want it? Me and my wife talked for a long time about getting our kids vaccinated, and my son with Down syndrome, he got vaccinated and he got Moderna. But we talked, oh man, from the minute the vaccines came out, we discussed, are we going to do this? And so maybe you can speak to the Johnson & Johnson, Dieter, and help people with that.
You know, it's interesting you talked about that, Russ. You know, one of the things that we did for one of our at interest groups is we held a town hall to specifically address concerns around Johnson & Johnson. And it was amazing. We had almost 300 individuals and we did a town hall in Spanish.
Wow.
And it was a phenomenal, phenomenal event. Realistically, you know, there are a lot of people that believe in Johnson & Johnson. There's some people that have fears about it. At the end of the day, it depends on your perspective and not everybody thinks the same way. Realistically, the nice thing about Johnson is it's a one and done shot. We know that the data behind its efficacy in preventing deaths or severe COVID or hospitalization is undeniable. And yeah, we have individuals who had blood clots and we even have, you know, someone who passed away from it. Realistically, we had millions and millions of individuals who were vaccinated with J&J. And you have to put these things in perspective. There is no treatment about what we do in life that's 100%, you know, foolproof and fail safe. I mean, if you go out and exercise, you can have a heart attack. Does that mean exercise is a bad thing to do? No.
Right.
I mean, you know, we all talk about, you know, traveling in cars. Does it mean that people don't pass away in car accidents and things like that? You know, of course they do. Does that mean that we should scrap cars? So I think we have to sometimes put things into perspective and look at what is the goal we're trying to achieve and understand that there is risk in life. And what we're trying to do is figure out how to mitigate that risk and ultimately take care of individuals. And, you know, we did a pause on J&J. I think that was well thought out. We were able to really look at data more. And then ultimately it became pretty clear that there is a segment of the population that, you know, it's a great option for. And, you know, we have to continue and we're going to continue to learn through this process like we learn in life.
So, Dave, in coupling with that, because I think Dieter, that answer is fantastic in my mind. As people come to the Sensory Friendly Clinic, and we gave the promo at the beginning, it'll be in the show notes, as well as I'll put some links to the articles that I mentioned, because I think they're really good articles that talk about how people work through it. And I know my wife and I, we really got to a point where after we were talking to people, thinking about it, and we just had this night where we just kind of went, okay, this is, we're going to do it. And some of it is getting over that hump to go, okay, we're going to do it. And it's funny, as soon as you decide to do it, you start hearing the messages differently. You start thinking about it. You become more positive because you get over that hump. But will it be a really great thing? Sort of a final question. Why will it be a really great thing for families to get a sensory friendly environment? There are parents who are afraid that, you know, will my kids sit still? You know, I had that fear, you know, will people be patient? You know, how will, you know, the nurses or doctors know, you know, how to interact with my kid. Can you just talk about, I've already mentioned that there'll be short wait times, minimal transitions, no crowds, visual aids, social stories, quiet areas, and much more, but just give the parents a little bit of thought about, hey, you're not going to have to worry about your kid and you're going to have help and you're going to have time.
Well, you just took all of my thunder away, Russ, with that list. So
I've never done that in my entire life, but I appreciate your humility.
Yeah, well, that's nothing should change. that's, first of all, that is like, I am so proud of Sequoia and Dignity for really putting it out there. I'm going to say this, and this is maybe an unprecedented statement. I've never seen any organization step forward like this for a community that is not only underserved, but is basically dismissed when it comes to this kind of effort. And I'm just very grateful. I just want to say that before I respond to that other question, I think that actually is relevant to my response. The average person is not a scientist or a doctor who's going to receive these vaccinations. They're a human. That's one thing we all share in common. And just as the manifestations and the clinical, the clinical issues surrounding the actual virus are themselves kind of on a spectrum. So are the considerations that surround getting these individuals into the clinic or getting them the access to the understanding and knowledge so they can make an informed decision. This is one way to do that. It's one step to be able to say to people, we understand, we respect who you are, respect who your loved ones you know, are. And we're not just about, as again, the word binary, we're not just about getting it in or doing it or not doing it. We are trying to let you know we care. And although people understand that intellectually, I can tell you very few people often feel that when it comes to mass efforts. And this is a massive effort, but it's not, it doesn't have to feel like a mass effort. It's an endeavor to try to take care of people. And I think, was it Dieter who said it? I think not everybody who is making these decisions has lost a loved one or had someone suffer, but there are many people who have. These people are not interested in, you know, weighing the literature and the different journals. They have suffered. And so, like you said, Russ, there's a point where we get to on the thought highway where we have to come to some mature point. We go, okay, this is essentially where I am, and we can understand that. I'm going to say, I think one thing you said is there's vaccine resistance, there's vaccine skepticism, there's vaccine hesitancy, and then there's vaccine curiosity. And I think those are very different, all of those. And just as those represent a continuum, if you would, I think the fact that this clinic is going to offer all the, not even amenities, just the advantages that you shared is also something that people are going to see, wow, I've never seen anything like this. It's new. I've never even known that people actually care this much. And for a lot of my clients, they are, I think, going to be quite surprised. I think I've already, you know, mentioned this to a number of people. It's their decision, of course, but I think it's going to be something that their fears of what they quote unquote hear is one silo. And the other silo is they fear what they don't know. And this is one way to dispel what they don't know.
Fantastic. I want to thank Dr. Bruno and Dr. Traver for being on our podcast. It's a lead different podcast. And we've tried today to make everybody feel comfortable. You shouldn't be ashamed of your vaccine questions. Hopefully we've answered some of them and give you some great conversation tools to use for you, your spouse, your friends to come to a decision about getting the vaccine. And we'll be more on the vaccine clinic, its location, its time at the end of the podcast. Thanks again, Dr. Bruno, Dr. Traver. I appreciate it. Thanks again for listening to Lead Different. We really appreciate all of you who've tuned in to this sensory-friendly vaccine clinic. Vaccine answers, you know, to really help us all not be afraid or ashamed or embarrassed by or put off by the fact that we have real questions and legitimate questions. And hopefully we answered those for you. And hopefully you'll be able to get the answers that you need if we didn't. This episode has been brought to you by the Sensory Friendly Vaccine Clinic. The Hope Technology School is partnering with Bay Area Christian Church and Sequoia Hospital to provide COVID-19 vaccines for people 12 and up who may require a more sensory-friendly environment. For those of you who are wondering, how do we get this sensory-friendly environment? Well, Hope Technology School is an inclusive school in Palo Alto, and you can look that up. We'll have a link in the show notes. And they have a great number of teachers and therapists and administrators who are incredibly familiar with how to create sensory-friendly environments, since that's what they do every day. This clinic was developed by a team of medical professionals and special education teachers and parents, but we want to make sure you understand that Sequoia Hospital, one of the finest hospitals in the Bay Area and in the country, is the one that's really delivering and providing nurses and doctors to be able to make sure that everything is done excellently. We've had a chance to meet with their head of pharmacy, their COO, and we want to thank again that team and Bill Graham, the president of Sequoia Hospital, for their willingness to do this. And so please take advantage of this. Go online and register at bacc.cc/clinic May 15th and June 12th at the Sequoia Health and Wellness Clinic in Redwood City, California. That's the Sequoia Health and Wellness Clinic in Redwood City, California. Have a great day. Continue to be optimistic. And remember that one of the best things about this is we got two doctors that are trusted messengers to help us get more trust in these vaccines.